right. Thanks, Chris. So we're in part two of the story of David. And if you missed last week, don't worry, you didn't miss a lot. You missed like the previews. That was it. We just sort of introduced this guy named David, and we literally just heard his name at the very end of the story we read last week. If you're here, you might remember Saul was the first king of Israel. And so this guy named Saul became the king, and yet he had some missteps along the way. He made some mistakes, some failures. And so God decided he shouldn't be king anymore. So God went looking for another king and found this guy named David. Which is interesting because when we were first introduced to Saul, we heard that he was tall and handsome and like a great warrior. And he had all these skills and abilities and he was a good leader. And yet he didn't cut it. And then when we're first introduced to David, we find out he's not tall. They don't say that. But he's very handsome. The ladies love him. He can play a mean guitar. Like he can like write songs. He can become this great warrior. He can do all of the, like, by all external looks, he's just like Saul. And yet, God saw something different in David. It's like God looked into his heart, and he saw something different inside there. And so tonight, we're going to get a glimpse of what God saw in David's heart. Now, what makes the story we're going to read tonight so powerful and so memorable, I think, is because it's very applicable to our lives. Like every single one of us can relate in some ways because the story we're going to read tonight is basically about fear. It's about being afraid of something. And I think we're all afraid of something. We all have fears. And I don't mean like I'm afraid of bugs or snakes or heights or things like that. I mean like deep-seated fears that actually drive the way we live our lives. Some of us are afraid of intimacy. Like we've gotten burned by people in the past. We've gotten close to people and they've stabbed us in the back or they've burned us. And we've just decided we're not going to get close to people anymore. Like we're just going to keep people at arm's length because that is the safest thing to do. And so maybe you're afraid of intimacy. Maybe you're afraid of failure. I have a friend who would probably say that this is his fear. Like in our culture, when our jobs or class or everything is based on our performance, on our success, on making the grade, on getting the promotion, on performing well, many of us are just afraid of failure. It's what drives us and we lay awake at night and we're stressed out about doing everything right and being the best and making the best grades and all those things. It's like that's the fear that's driving us. Some of us are afraid of loneliness. Some of us are afraid of being single the rest of our lives. Some of us are afraid of rejection. Like, we want people so desperately to approve of us, to receive us, to accept us, to like us, that we spend enormous amounts of mental energy thinking about how to dress and what to say and what to wear and how to look so that other people will like us. We're basically just afraid of rejection. Some of us are afraid of death. I mean, I could go on, and it could get like more discouraging and more depressing as the night goes. But the truth is, we're all driven by fears in some form or fashion. And these fears, oftentimes, we get into situations or we get into something where there's something in front of us, and we become so locked in on what it is that's scaring us that our perspective is driven by that, and we act and live out of that. Now, the good news is when you read the Bible, there's tons of stories of people who are afraid in the Bible. In fact, Saul's a good one. Go back and read some of the stories. He was driven by fear. And we can say, wow, I'm not the only one. Other people, you know, struggle with this as well. But tonight we're going to read a story about a guy named David who brought a totally different perspective and outlook to this thing called fear. So, if you've got a Bible, turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we are going to read probably one of the most famous stories in the whole Bible. So if you're not a church person, if you're coming back to church, if you didn't grow up in church, it's kind of weird. I grew up in church, and so sometimes it's like, well, you remember this, you remember that. And I meet people who like they're like, I never grew up reading the Bible. I never grew up going to church. I have no clue what you're talking about. And it's true. But even if you're in that camp or that category, you've almost certainly heard the story that we're going to read tonight. So, it's 1 Samuel chapter 17. Saul was still the king at that time. God had just sort of decided, you know, amongst himself and a couple of others that David was going to be the next king, but word hadn't got out about that yet. Saul's still the king. Everything's still happening under him. And so this is what happens starting in verse 1. It says, "Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socah in Judah. And they pitched camp at Ephes Damim between Socah and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another with the valley between them." So, the Philistines were like the arch enemies of the Israelites. They were always going at each other. They were always in battle. I mean, it just went back over. And in some ways, you could say it's still happening today. The word Palestine or Palestinian comes from the ancient people group of the Philistines. And so even back then, the Philistines were these people that lived near the Mediterranean, and they were always haggling and fighting over different towns and different areas. They mostly lived in the area we call the Gaza Strip today. And so oftentimes they would go at battle. And in this case, especially during David and Saul's time period, there were lots of battles between these two groups of people, the Israelites and the Philistines. And so it happened again here. And it says, and we've actually got a picture of this. This is a picture of the Valley of Elah today in modern-day Israel. So this is a real story. This isn't made up. This isn't a fairy tale. It's not a fable or anything. This actually happened at a real place. And you can see up there the Philistines' camp would have been up on one hillside, the Israelites' camp on the other. There wouldn't have been big storage sheds there right in the middle and a big road. But that was the Valley of Elah. And there was actually a little creek bed that went right through the valley there. And so with them camped on either side, this is what the Bible says happened next. Verse 4. "A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span, which means he was about 10 feet tall. Now, that might be an exaggeration. We don't know. There's another version of the story that says he was about 7 feet tall, so maybe there's a little exaggerating going on here. But even if he was 7 feet, like either way, he was really, really big. So it said he was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. That's over 100 pounds. So a guy that big would require 100 pounds worth of armor to cover his body. It says, on his legs he wore bronze greaves. Those were protecting his shins. And a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. That's about 15 pounds right there on the end of his spear. And it says his shield bearer went ahead of him. So we get all these details about this guy named Goliath. And part of the details, and there's more details in this whole story than any other battle story we get in David's life. And there's a lot of battle stories in David's life. He was a warrior. And yet, it's almost like the narrator or the people that put together what became the book of 1 Samuel that we now read, you know, realize this is such an important story. We want everyone to understand exactly what it was like. We're going to give all the details so you know exactly what it looked like. This was a defining moment in David's life. So picture this guy named Goliath. It goes on, verse 8. "Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, 'Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us.' And then the Philistine said, 'This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other.' And on hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified." So Goliath throws down the gauntlet. And he basically comes out, and he has this very creative way of approaching battle, and this, it seems like, was characteristic of the Philistines. They decided, rather than like have 1,000 of our men slaughter each other and spill all this blood on the battlefield, why don't we just take our best guy and you take your best guy, and we'll send them down to the valley, and they'll go at it, you know, one-on-one, mano-a-mano, and whoever comes out alive wins. And the other side has to retreat and has to be subject to the winners. So that was their way of doing things. And in fact, the word champion, it's translated champion there in the Hebrew, literally means man who stands between the two. Man who stands between and emerges between the two armies victorious. And so the Israelites are caught in this bind because this huge warrior named Goliath comes down and they're looking around going, there's no way any of us can beat him. And we can't retreat. Like, we don't want to go back and say, well, we were scared to even go into battle. And yet if we go against him, we lose. Like, what do we do? And so they're shaking in their boots, scared to death. And for 40 days, this goes on. Every single day for 40 days, Goliath comes down and he taunts the Israelites. And it says they were terrified and dismayed. Now, do you know why they were so scared? And this is really important. You can't miss this detail. They were so scared because they didn't have the right perspective on what was going on. They bought into what Goliath had told them. Because Goliath came forward and he said, are you not the servants of Saul? Am I not here defying and taunting the armies of Israel? And so consequently, they looked around and they said, well, this is Saul's problem or this is Israel's problem. And if it was Saul's problem or it was Israel's problem, then they had good reason to be scared. Because essentially they looked at Saul and said, wow, our king is big and strong and good and you know all that, but there's no way he can beat Goliath. Like, there's just no way. And then they looked around themselves and they said, can any of us beat Goliath? Does any of us have the skill? Is any of us fast enough? Are we strong enough? Are we big enough? Like, is there any way, does anyone stand a chance against Goliath? And of course, the answer was no. No way. None of us can beat this guy. And so they were scared to death because they saw the problem as Saul's problem, or they saw the problem as Israel's problem. And they did what we often do when we're in the same situation and we're afraid of something. They forgot to factor God into the equation. Now, when I say that, I don't mean they didn't pray. I bet they prayed for 40 days straight. Like, I bet every single night they went to bed and they prayed and they said, God, would you please save us? Would you please rescue us? Would you please get us out of this? If you'll just get us out of this predicament, then we promise we'll do, you know, like, everyone, when they're afraid of something or when they're in a situation like that where something huge is going on in their life and they just don't know what they do and they just don't know if they can handle it, everyone prays to some extent. But they still, in a sense, forgot to factor God into their thinking. He wasn't really a part of their perspective. And we see that most because a guy named David shows up with a very different perspective. Now, David, we're going to skip some verses here. We're not going to read all of them because it's a really long story. But David had three older brothers who were in the army. And he was probably still young because he wasn't in Saul's army. So he was maybe 16, 17, maybe 18 or 19. We don't know for certain. But his three older brothers were there at the battlefield while David was still home in Bethlehem, little town. Nobody had heard of it then. Gets famous down the road because of somebody else. He's over at home in Bethlehem watching the sheep. It's only 15 miles away. Bethlehem is only 15 miles from this battlefield. And so his dad says, I want you to go check on your brothers. They're in the army. They're camped in the valley. They're going up against the Philistines. We haven't gotten a report how the battle is going. I want you to take some food and go check on your brothers, find out how they're doing, see how they are. And so David heads over to the battlefield. And it's day 40, and this is what happens. Verse 23. As he was talking with them, that's David, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. And whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. So Goliath comes out once again. He makes his taunts once again. You know, am I a Philistine or you? You know, and he's like defying the armies of Israel once again. Everyone's scared to death. They're paralyzed with fear. They just don't know. I mean, it's 40 days this has been going on. And the best plan they can come up with is Saul's plan. Saul, like, is scared to death too. He doesn't know what to do, but he's the king. He should do something, right? And yet, look at the plan that Saul comes up with. Look at what they say in the next verse, verse 25. Now, the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." So Saul basically says, there's no way I can take down Goliath, but if anyone has the guts, if anyone has the courage to go out there and can actually kill Goliath, I'll give him tons of money, I'll give him my beautiful daughter, he'll get a tax cut on his 1040, like anything it takes to get somebody to go down there and take care of this problem. So even Saul is scared to death, and he doesn't know what to do. So David, interestingly, as he hears all this, he asks for a little bit of clarification, like, huh? Really? Like, that's what the deal is? In doing that, he asks a question that is so insightful. Look at what David says next, verse 26. David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man?" Like, I know you guys just said what will be done, but just to make sure I heard the marriage and the woman and all, I just want to make sure I heard everything right. "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel?" And then look at the question he asked. "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? You see, David didn't see Goliath as Saul's problem. David didn't see Goliath as Israel's problem. David saw Goliath as God's problem. You see, for David, it was, who is this guy? Who does he think he is that he can come down to the valley every single day and taunt and defy the armies of the living God? Who is this guy? Who does he think he is that he can do that? You see, here's what made David's perspective. David knew, bit of history here, David knew that God had revealed himself to Israel. And he had revealed himself to Israel in order to reveal himself to the rest of the world. That God was Israel's God. In fact, they called him Yahweh. And the way that he would reveal himself to the rest of the world is that as long as Israel would follow him and live under him and structure their society according to his laws, all the other nations would look at Israel and say, wow, look at them. Look at how much better their culture is. Look at how much better their society is. Their God must be the one true God. And so that was how God was going to reach all the nations around Israel. And at times, Israel would be threatened. At times, people would reject Israel and would reject Israel's God. And so God said, you know what? There's going to be times we're going to be in a pinch. There's going to be times where people won't like you. There's going to be times where the odds are stacked against you. But that is the perfect opportunity for me to reveal myself in power to all of those people. If you will just begin to see that anytime anyone comes against you, it's not that they have a problem with you, it's they have a problem with me. And if you'll begin to see every battle not as your battle, but as my battle, well then in those moments, your greatest fears will be my greatest opportunity to reveal myself to you and through you. You see, that was David's perspective. Now, let me pause for just a second before we read more of the story. If you're here tonight and you're a follower of Jesus, and if you're not, we'll get to you in a second, but if you're here tonight and you're a follower of Jesus, do you know what you are? You are an adopted son or daughter of God. Like, he loves you and he adopted you and he gives you all the grace and love that a father could give you. You're redeemed by God. Like, he bought you at a very high price, his own son, so that he could win you back, and He could redeem you, and He could free you from all the brokenness in your life and all the bruises and all the bondage. He could take all of that and say, I want to redeem you and liberate you so you can live and become the person I made you to be. It means you're also like Israel. You are His prized possession. So that He looks at you and He says, everything I do in your life is so that I can reveal myself to you and through you to all the other people around you. So that when they look at you and they look at how you respond to circumstances, they'll say, wow, look at what a transformed life looks like. See, that's why Paul can say, there's nothing that takes place in your life. All things that happen in your life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, God works in all of those to bring about His purposes, to reveal Himself to you and to other people around you. It's what Jesus said one time in John chapter 10. We're not going to read it, but you can go look at it sometime. But just paraphrasing, Jesus basically said, look, if you begin following me, it's like you're placing yourself in God's hands. And when you do that, God is never going to let go of you. And it means that for the rest of your life, you are in God's hands, and there's nothing that comes against you that doesn't pass through God's hands first. It means you're always protected. It means you're always in the palm of His hands, and He is always looking out for you so that in every situation you face, no matter how afraid you are, no matter how scared you are, no matter what's going on, you can rest assured, God is with me. God is protecting me. If God is for me, who can be against me? Who do I have to fear? Who is this giant? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine who defies the armies of the living God? Now, if you're here tonight and you're not a follower of Jesus, maybe you're just curious. Maybe you're checking things out, wherever you are, but you'd say, I'm just not there yet. Let me give you some advice and maybe a bit of a challenge as well. There's a book out, and it's a best-selling book. It's called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Now, it's one of those self-help books, but it's a really popular one. It's sold over 2 million copies. It is like the number one book to go to when it comes to this idea of how do you deal with the issue of fear in your life. And the author that wrote it, she's really, really smart, and she has some great insights. Look at what she says. She says we all have different levels of fear. The first level are level one fears. And level one fears are basically stuff happens, to put it cleanly. Stuff happens. So this is when you lose your job and you're afraid you're not going to be able to find another job. Level one fear. Then she says there are level two fears. And these are ego related. These are some of the ones I mentioned before. These are the fear of rejection, fear of intimacy, the fear of responsibility, the fear of failure. Those kinds of things. But then she says there are level three fears. And this is the fear behind all of our fears. And this is what she writes for level three fears. At the bottom of every one of our fears is simply the fear that we can't handle whatever life may bring us. The fear that you won't be able to cope. And if you knew in advance that you could take it, there would be nothing to be afraid of. In other words, at the bottom of all of our fears is this fear, I'm just not going to be able to handle this. If I get that news, I can't handle it. If she leaves, I can't handle it. If he leaves, if it goes this way, if I don't get the job, if I don't get this, if I get that, if this happens, I just don't think I can handle it anymore. That's at the bottom of all of our fears. So what's the answer? Here's what she says next. She says, all you have to do to diminish your fear is to develop more trust in your ability to handle whatever comes your way. In other words, you don't just try to live a more cautious life. You don't take less risks, all those kind of things. Fear is always going to be there, but the way to diminish your fear is to ultimately believe and trust that you can face anything that comes your way. So that it's like waking up every single morning and being able to say, I can handle whatever comes at me today. Whatever I face today, in my job, in my family, in that conversation I really don't want to have, in that situation that I'm so afraid of, whatever comes at me today, whether it's the crazy kids, the rebellious kids, cancer, the terrible phone call that I never want to get. Whatever it is, I can handle it. But let me say this. If there ever comes a day where you'd have to say, I can't handle it anymore. I can't keep psyching myself up. Like, I can't keep saying that I can deal with this, that I'm in control, that I've got everything taken care of, that I'm not going to come unglued if this happens. If there ever comes a day where it feels like you've been carrying this burden around so long and you just can't carry it anymore, well, then Jesus says, come to me. All who are tired, all who have been carrying a burden so long that they can't carry it anymore, come to me if you're stressed out, if you're scared, whatever it is you're carrying, bring it to me. Give it to me. I'll carry it for you. So I think we need to come to the place where we say, we're going to have those days. We're going to have those moments. And the sooner that we can say, you know what, I can't face it all. I can't handle it all on my own. And if this is always going to be my problem, if everything that comes into my life is going to be something I have to deal with and I have to address and I have to solve, I'm never going to be able to take it. But if I can adopt the perspective that I'm in the palm of God's hands and anything that comes into my life, it's His problem, not my problem, then I can begin believing that my greatest fears are His greatest opportunities. Now, let's look at the end of the story here. Verse 32, David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. So Saul replied, you are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth. But look at how David responds, next verse. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it, and I rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. You see, David was able to draw on his past. And see, when we're so scared, we can be so focused on the thing in front of us and just be paralyzed by that. But David was able to step outside of that and say, you know what? I've been in this situation before, and I trusted God, and God always took care of me. I didn't know how it was going to end. I don't know why I like ran at that line and just. But I just felt like no matter what came against me, I was in God's hands, and I can do that again right now. And so Saul gives David his armor, but it doesn't fit because David's a lot smaller. And then it says this in verse 40. Then David took his staff in his hand, and he chose 5 smooth stones from the stream. And he put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag. So he's got his shepherd's staff and a shepherd's bag to go off against Goliath. And his sling in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. And he looked David over, and he saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. Of course he did. He said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with your sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. And then David shared a very different perspective with Goliath. A perspective that I think we all need to have when we face our fears as well. Verse 45. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, But I come against you in the name of Yahweh of all armies. Sometimes it's translated Lord Almighty, but that kind of misses it. It's Yahweh of all the armies. Yahweh is in control of all the armies in the world. I come against you in the name of Yahweh of all armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day Yahweh will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know it is not by sword or spear that Yahweh saves, for the battle is Yahweh's, and he will give all of you into our hands. So David's a warrior. And we're going to see that over and over. But in other words, he's basically saying, look, I'm going to put my trust in God. The battle is God's. It's not mine. See, this problem, you're not my problem. You're not Saul's problem. You're not Israel's problem. You are God's problem. And yeah, you come and you defy us, but you're really defying God. And you taunt us, but you're really taunting God. And so I'm going to put my trust in him. And I don't know how it's all going to work out. Somehow I'm going to cut your head off. Just letting you know, I don't even have a sword, but it's going to happen. Because I'm trusting in God. And I know that I'm scared to death right now. But my greatest fear is God's greatest opportunity to do something amazing. Bible says, and we all know how the story ends, David took off running at Goliath. He didn't walk, he ran towards Goliath. And he took one stone, and he slung it, and it hit Goliath in the one spot that could have knocked him down. And then he went over and he picked up his sword and he cut off his head. And the armies rallied and the Israelites won. And the word went out to all the nations. Israel's God, Yahweh, is the one true God. Now, here's the bottom line for all of us. And it couldn't be any more clear. Your greatest fear in your life right now is God's greatest opportunity. Your greatest fear is God's greatest opportunity. So what I want you to do is think, what's your greatest fear? You were given a stone, hopefully, when you walked in. And so I want you to grab it and look at it and think, this represents my greatest fear. And so what's your greatest fear in life right now? Maybe for you it's something related to your job. Maybe something's going on there with a coworker, with your boss, just with money or finances or something, and you're scared to death of how it's going to turn out. Maybe there's a conversation that you keep avoiding or a person you keep avoiding because you're scared of how it's going to go. Maybe there's something about yourself that you're scared other people are going to find out. And if they ever found out about it, I just don't know if anyone would actually accept me for who I am. And that's your greatest fear. Maybe you're afraid of losing someone, of losing him, losing her, of never finding him, of never finding her. Whatever it is for you, what represents your greatest fear, take this rock, put it in your pocket for the next week, and every time you look at it, every time you see it, every time you touch it, think to yourself, my greatest fear is God's greatest opportunity. Now, let me flip it around real quick, and then we'll kind of wrap up by singing some songs together. Maybe you could ask the question this way. What's God's greatest opportunity in your life right now? You want to see God move the most in your life? You want to see God work the most? Where can God do the greatest things? Where can you experience God more in any area than any area in your life? Where can you feel God's presence? Where can you really see him move in a way that you've never seen him move before? If you want that, let me tell you this, the place that you'll see him move, the place that you'll experience him the most, it's in your greatest fear. Because your greatest fear is the point where God can do the most in your life. It's His greatest opportunity. So what if we were a group of people that really believed that, that embraced that perspective, David's perspective, that in every area of our life where we're afraid, God could do something big. So that maybe a few years down the road, people would come to us and say, how is it that you have so much faith? How is it that you have so much courage? It's like when you face tough things in life, it's like you just got so much courage. You can say, wasn't always that way, but I began to learn that the things I was most scared of were the greatest opportunities in my life for God to do something big, for me to experience Him in ways that I've never experienced Him before. Because our greatest fears are His greatest opportunities. Let me pray. Father God, all of us really do want to believe that tonight. And I'm guessing that some of us are facing some significant fears. I'm guessing that some of us have had sleepless nights. There's things that we stress out about, or we're worried about, or anxious about, or just nagging things over and over and over. And so, God, we know that those things can bring us down. We know that those things can be like a battle that we're fighting. It's like an enemy that we're fighting. And so we just want to give that to You tonight. We want to see those things not as our battle, but as Your battle. We want to see ourselves in the palm of Your hands. You as our fortress, as our refuge, as our Father who loves us. And so God, we want to just take a few minutes now and sing to You and worship You and remind ourselves of who You are for each one of us. We pray this in Your name. Amen.